Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hey everybody, in this episode of the Riverdale After Show, we're breaking down season 2, chapter 16, The Watcher in the Woods. What happens when Archie dives into some old comic books to bring justice to all his friends in Riverdale? Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ooh. Look at that. A little bit of Hocus Pocus playing us into this episode of the Riverdale After Show. This, of course, is the show where we break down every episode of Riverdale airing Tuesday nights there on, or excuse me, Wednesday nights. Gotta get my days right. Wednesday nights here on the CW. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
Hey guys, I am Shay Jones filling in again, and I'm so excited to be here. You can find me at Real Shay Jones on Twitter and Instagram. And guys, I'm in the live chat, so please, your theories and comments are just amazing to me, so keep them coming.
And of course, Ben Bateman, Sam and Joelle, they are all on assignment, so they couldn't be here tonight, so it'll be just Shay and I breaking it down, but they'll be back here next week as we dive into all things Riverdale. And of course, folks, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel while you're there, give it a thumbs up. And as Shay mentioned, the chat is up and running, so I know you're already in there. She's been laughing giddily at all your theories and speculations and thoughts.
Awesome. Come on.
There you go.
I'm just loving everybody. Like, Callie, respect. That's all I have today.
Well, a lot of respect. A lot of respect being delivered by Shay today. So, yes, Chapter 16, The Watcher in the Woods. Of course, the biggest question, the way the last episode ended, was with the kind of the nod to the Zodiac Killer. What happened to Midge and Moose? And people were saying, no, they're dead. They're dead. It's been confirmed they're dead. And no, they are both alive.
They are both alive. And I was just like, dang it.
Well, no, but I felt like I said last week, I feel like that's you need that, because you can't. Otherwise, you're setting the precedent that every episode somebody's got to die. And you're going to burn through a lot of just like, even like, you know, big characters in the show if you're going to start killing somebody off every single episode.
That is true.
So you can put them definitely, you know, in very dangerous situations, some life-threatening situations, some potential hospital visits. But, like, you know, you gotta be judicious with your kills. Otherwise, you know, season 3 is going to be a very quiet show. Or it's just going to be like maybe just the 4 kids in it because everybody else has been killed around
them. No, I did that because you said season 3. I was like, wait, where is season 2?
I know, but season 3, if it gets renewed for another season.
True.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, then I got it. I was hoping for that too, but I was just like, wait, that means my mind's catching up in life today. yeah, so true, but if we get to season 3, we finally get to meet Sabrina, so at that point, everybody will be happy.
Oh, true, and then she just magically resurrects everybody. And then there you go.
Technically, I think that's against the rules.
Yeah. Is it? We don't know. Hmm. Depends on which Archie you were adapting there. Afterlife with Archie. Who knows? But anyway, we find out, though, that, of course, somebody that heard this going on, though, was Kevin, because he was just night jogging there in the woods.
Yeah, he was cruising.
Yeah, Kevin's got a really interesting story arc starting to develop for this season there, where he is somebody that is a gay character in a very small town and not really knowing what to do. He can't, as he and Betty were talking, he can't be like Betty Cooper and have all these variety of options available to him.
I have two feelings on this, because I totally understand being in a small town and for some reason you're the only openly gay person in a town. So yeah, your options are definitely limited and everything has to be done in the dark. But on the flip side of that, I'm thinking, dude, there's a killer where you just found your friends from school shot and a guy you made out with, a whole different type of murder with Jason Blossom. Like, some these woods and water apparently for you are just not, they're trying to tell you something, Kevin.
True, but you also think that teenagers, they have that, they think they're immortal. They even though people are getting injured or killed around them, there's still that thing that's like, it could happen, but it's not going to happen to me.
And I totally get that mind space, because teenagers, everybody believes when you're a teenager that you can just reach the stars. And that's like, that's not a bad feeling, but it's also not smart.
No, that's, and he, but Kevin acknowledges that. He knows it's not smart, but he can't help himself. He's somebody that just has, you know, just these desires, and he's looking for a way to fulfill them. And not the healthiest way about going about this at all. So, I mean, I feel like at least Kevin acknowledges that he knows what he's doing is wrong, yeah. And yet he's still, that's
a terrible
thing.
A mature thing for Kevin to say, like, I know what I'm doing isn't norm, isn't right, but it's kind of what I have to do for myself at this time point where I'm at in my life. And that's a very mature thing, just 16-year-old to say, regardless. But I'm also just like, there has to be another way. I feel like then, maybe because I'm afraid of the dark, I'm just like, why in the woods? Like,
but because you don't want to be seen. That's why you go to the woods, so you're not seen. If it was totally fine, then you know, you wouldn't have to go to the woods.
I just want Moose to come out so him and Kevin can get together. Then, like, so he's still heartbroken over Joaquin. Like, he needs Moose. I need Moose, and just to realize, like, dude, you almost died. Now come to your true self, admit you're gay, and get with Kevin, and hopefully we all be good today.
That's, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what Kevin's story arc is going to be this season, but I did like his conversation that he had with his dad at the end of the episode, because it's been very much like, hasn't had his dad as somebody that he can talk to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that's tough. As much as we want to think that 2017 is very progressive, we definitely know that there are a lot of people that are kind of closed off or choose to turn a blind eye to what their children's needs or wants or desires are. And Kevin's dad, I feel like at least in his way, was like, let's try to start a dialogue to try to help you.
And that was good. That's like, I think when people see this episode, they're going to so relate to it. That scene is so a relatable scene. Whether if you're like, you always want your dad or your mom to hear you, that scene may be like, maybe you can try to open up the dialogue if they haven't so far yet. At least try to open it and get the conversation flowing. Even if it's very tentative, at least you try to start it.
Yeah, it's better to at least have, because the only way it's going to get better is by keep having those, and at least initially maybe awkward conversations between you and your parent. It's only going to get better the more you do it. You got to be able to talk about those things. Otherwise, then the secrets, they make you run into the woods, Shay. You don't want to be running in the woods. Don't do your night jogging.
Guys, don't do night jogging. If this episode has not taught you anything, night jogging, I mean, if you do it.
I personally night jog all the time. I mean,
what?
Should I watch this episode and learn something?
If you're not cruising, okay, night jog, but also be aware of your surroundings, or just don't go jogging the woods.
Okay, all right.
I would say I'm still on the woods part. I think that's what it is for me. It's more than anything else. It's the fact that he's jogging through woods. I'm just like, there's no park, so you can't just run through a park. I don't know.
Well, we don't know because we're only seeing it at night. We don't know. During the day, there could be a lot of lovely things over there in those woods.
True.
It could be a lot of cool paths that open up to like little play areas and stuff. We'll never know until we see it during the light. And maybe that's Kevin's story arc this season. We'll be learning to go into the woods during the day and having fun. what I thought was interesting, too, is Cheryl's involvement in this episode too.
Her just like being in the background was everything in life. Let me start that. Yes, she's just like, she's gonna be like an insect, like just listening and not interacting till she feels it's appropriate time to interject.
But I like, you know, because I don't know, I feel like Cheryl, she can be so over the top in a unpleasant way, to be able to, because to see her at least in her way trying to help somebody in her fashion. I thought that I like seeing that this episode.
I actually agree with that, because she didn't have to call Betty. She could have personally just followed Kevin herself and kept an eye on him, but she knew that they were kind of close, so, and her, that was her way of trying to be involved but still removed.
Yeah, or I mean, she could have just been, you know, incredibly like, not, I don't want to say selfish or just not interested and not get involved at all, just notice it, him at Pabst Diner leaving, and just like, I noticed that and I'm not going to do anything about it because that's his life. But she actually decided to take a step further and reach out to one of his friends to try to see if he could help.
Yeah, like, everyone in the chat has been going on about that, particularly of why Kevin's so mad at Betty. Some of them can't understand why he's still so mad at her. I mean, her heart was in the right place. And if personally, if that's you're my friend, I mean, after you said that, I'm going to hear what you had to say. I can totally respect it. I don't have to like your decisions that you make in life. I can still be there for you. And that's all I can do. I can give you my opinion and then you cannot take it.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if Kevin is seeing that as just, you know, you kind of breaking my trust by going directly to my dad and telling him what I'm doing. That's kind of my business. And if anybody should tell my dad, it should be me if I choose to tell him. Who are you to kind of go and tell my dad about what I'm doing? I can understand his point of view. I don't necessarily think that's right. I kind of agree with you that, you know, sometimes, you know, it takes a friend kind of getting the kind of breaking the dam slightly, because without that conversation, then Kevin, without Betty talking to the sheriff, Kevin and his dad don't have that conversation at the end of the episode. I feel like at least that's going to start the kind of them kind of getting on the same page in terms of who Kevin is and what he wants to be going forward in his life.
And that's very important. And like I said, I totally understand why Kevin feels the way he feels, because that kind of in his mind is a betrayal of trust. But she didn't do it to be malicious or with ill intent. And I think that's why I'm on her side of that. It wasn't with ill intent. And some people are saying she's just trying to fix everybody without focusing on herself. That is most likely definitely true.
Both things can be true, for sure.
But I really hope, I think they kind of fix it for next week's episode, which I'm excited to see. But I'm just like, Kevin, you can be mad, at least for a little while. I'll give you that. Be mad, because I feel like he needs to be mad at Betty for a while.
Don't we all need to be mad at Betty Cooper?
Can we be mad at Alice Cooper? I like being mad at Alice Cooper. Or what? Hermione this episode. I want to be mad at Hermione a little bit.
Well, let's talk about Betty Cooper. Alice Cooper. I mean, she is... Man, she is so, like, up and down. And they even addressed that in this episode, too, with Polly. And Betty, as we're talking about why Polly's going to leave. Like, you know, so say she always goes a little bit too far. Then she apologizes, but she still goes too far again in something. And in this case, it is she decides to publish a letter that she got from the person that says that they've been doing all these acts of violence. That they've shot Fred, that they killed Miss Grundy, that they shot Moose and Midge, and actually have Fred Andrews' wallet and his sunglasses to kind of show, yep, this is me, and I'm going to keep doing it to get rid of all these people that I find like are doing things that are just morally repugnant to me.
And I agree with Alice for this episode in the sense that she, you know, printed it. People can come at me for that, but I actually agree with her. As a public, I want to know.
I feel like that's always, you know, I don't know exactly what the right answer is in terms of how do you deal with a threat and what's the best way to let the public know about that. It's always a you know, do you stir up unnecessary drama? Do you, warning them is the best thing to do so that they stay indoors and they're more secure or at least they're more hypervigilant? I don't know. It's always a dicey situation to when you reveal that information.
And personally, Alice didn't have to do nothing. Hiram did it all. Hiram steered that up real nicely. Like, you got to admit, yeah. Like, dude steered it up so nicely and just, like, he sat back and watched like he was the godfather.
No, very like, true. We'll get to Hiram in a second, but with Alice publishing this, it has a direct effect on her immediate family, though, because Polly, as she says, you know, this puts a big target on me. I am having a child out of wedlock.
With my cousin's babies.
Yes. So.
And if that is not morally not correct, nothing else is right.
Yeah. You know, certainly, and ignorance is probably is no excuse at that point. She didn't know that they were cousins going into this.
That is true. But, like, you can't fault her for, you know, you can't help for you, who you fall in love with, especially when the parents don't tell the other side of the family, hey, we're family.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not her fault, but she is, I think, is smart to get away and to protect her children.
Yeah. I do not blame Polly for wanting to, at least until whatever happens, until this killer is caught.
Yeah.
To, like, hey, I'm just going to, I'm heading to the farm.
The farm.
It does make it seem like that's where, like, when you're sending an animal that you've, you know,
that's had to passing. Put to sleep.
Yes, and you tell the kids, oh, you know, this animal's at the farm. Like, so poor Polly. Polly's at the farm, everybody. Polly's at the farm, just having fun, relaxing up there.
Some people are torn with Alice publishing it, though.
It's
Juanita. Yeah, I hear you.
You know, I think the hardest thing is that we never once saw Alice consider that. She never strayed from that. If she had had like a moment like she really kind of took what Polly said to heart and kind of thought about it for a second, but she really didn't. She just was straight ahead in her convictions. For better or for worse, Alice was going to do what she was going to do.
But also in her mind, she's like, these are my grandchildren. Like, I don't want you to go away at the same time.
Well,
that is not, like you said, it didn't really enter her mind because she's single-minded focused. When she's like a dog with a bone. And we all know this about Alice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. And I feel like, I can't even remember Alice's husband's name. I forget.
Hal.
Hal. Poor Hal. He's got such a thankless role so far this season. I'm hoping he's getting more to do because so far it's him just kind of standing in the background of the hospital. Him like, oh, I'll talk to Polly. That's all we're getting from Hal so far this season.
I mean, I think they're like a very tumultuous peacemaking reconciliation. She threw a brick in the thing. I don't even know what's going on in that relationship no more.
Yeah, it's, I mean, of the two of them, I feel like we definitely have a better handle on who Alice is. Even with a lot of her backstory, not kind of allusions to her earlier, like maybe involved with the serpents, things like that growing up. But I feel like Hal, we still don't, other than like knowing that, you know, he and the Blossoms kind of split up and now have this intense feud between them. We still don't have a lot of backstory about Hal yet.
But the fact that when she was Polly's age, he made her go to the,
well, we know the that nun's
place. But we do know we're going to meet a certain someone very soon this season, guys, and I am so excited to meet Chick.
We'll see, yeah. That should be interesting to see what happens there. The other thing that happens this episode, of course, is that Veronica, so excited to have everybody over and have her inner circle watch the Matchlorette.
Which I just love that name. I'm just like, okay, y'all just don't want to pay nobody, so yes, call it the Matchlorette.
No, that's right. But why are you going to promote another network's programming?
That is very true. But if something called the Matchlorette, I would actually watch that.
Now, how do you know the CW is not working on that right now?
CW. Just saying.
That's right. So she wants to invite everybody to watch that, and it's an opportunity to meet her father.
Yes.
And, Hermione, for this, for the majority of the episode, kind of warns her off on this, like, that you're playing with fire, you don't want to do this. And Veronica is just full steam ahead. She does not want to alter her course.
Because in her mind, if her dad has really changed, there is no need for it. There's no need to hide or keep her, you know, friends separate from her family. But Hermione won't admit it.
But Veronica knows that he hasn't, well... Who knows how much, but it really hasn't changed that much. Like, yes. After seeing, you know, the doorman kind of be shown the door, that right there to let Veronica know, like, yeah, okay, nothing's really changed.
Yeah, but, like, she wants confirmation. And since she isn't getting confirmation, she's going to do what she wants to do.
I felt like this episode, because I know Ben Bateman Media, he's all about Hermione being, like, the real godfather of this whole thing. And I feel like this episode...
It was more Hiram pulling the strings and in the situation.
Yeah.
Because I don't think... Okay, this is what I think. I don't think Hermione is technically afraid of Hiram. I halfway agree with the fact that Ben might be right in the whole godmother thing and the fact that she's playing everything close to her vest and picking and choosing how she's going to handle the situation.
I don't know. I mean, you really get to see Hiram really kind of start showing his true colors in this episode. But seeing Hermione kind of react at the family dinner where she's like...
Oh, probably see that.
Oh, yeah. It blows her a kiss. Yeah.
And no, my favorite... I'm sorry. Hermione had the best line of this thing. She's like, no need to be so thirsty. I was like, my hands came up and I was just like... She hit you hard. She hit you in a gut punch where it really counted today. Hermione did not come to play with you, little girl.
No.
No.
So, of course, you know, when you're meeting your daughter, you know, the apple of your eye, you're meeting her new boyfriend. Of course, you want to get to know the guy better. You know about Archie Andrews and you know Fred Andrews, but like, hey, let's get the chance to get to know you a little bit better. Invite you over for dinner. And Hermione's like, this is a terrible idea. Do not do this. Veronica's like, well, unless you tell me that he's bad, if you can tell me that, then we should stop having this conversation.
And never have it again.
Yeah. And Hermione just is quiet. So, and what I liked about that is we're talking about Hiram. Here's that conversation. The walls are thin in this apartment. I heard everything, like where, like I was standing right there. So don't try to poison my daughter against me.
I mean, and when he said it, I was like, if I was Hermione, I'd be thinking, I don't really need to poison her because she's kind of already been poisoned previously. I can just be her mother and want her a little bit, but she's also your daughter. So we'll see how that plays off.
Yeah, I do not think... I think ever since what's happened from the first season when she came to town with Riverdale, I feel like she has a different perspective on her father now. And she, as she said, I mean, you know, she can't go back to the kid that she was. She definitely sees Hiram for warts and all at this point. So yeah. I think even... Yeah, I agree with you. It's like she doesn't have to worry about poisoning her against Veronica. Veronica slowly cluing in about like, nope, my dad is... Not the best dude.
And then, like, I love how the fact that at the end of the episode, she's like, I feel like I should, you know, have more of a role in Lodge Industries. Like, either because she's searching for something. And even her mom's face, like, Hermione's face was just like, you don't want to do that. Like, she didn't say it, but her face was just spoke volumes of the situation. Like, you don't want to do that, but dad's doing all the talking.
No, that's true. I feel like Veronica's just going to keep pushing.
She's going to keep pushing until she finds what she wants.
Yeah. Tell me how you felt about this, though. So Archie goes over to have dinner, and then it seemed like such an abrupt, like, 180 with the conversation with Hiram right there at the dinner table. You know, hey, we got this. Do you like rum? Yeah, I've got this, you know, this great Lodge rum. Do you want to have some? And Veronica says, yes, sure, he'll have some. Like, are you kidding me? I was like, who... Like, 16-year-old kid is going to say, yeah, I'll have rum with you. To somebody that you're dating, you're not going to tell that girl's father, yes, I will drink alcohol.
Well, luckily, he didn't say it, Veronica did. And I think for her, it was maybe her first time her dad might have taken interest in somebody she was dating that way. So she felt that she needed to get Archie that in. Maybe it's a New York thing. I don't know what they do in New York when you're rich and, like, socialite.
It's a given a 16-year-old alcohol. That is, like, clearly a test. Because, like, get out of here. What? Who? No way. He was waiting for Archie to say, no, sir, I don't drink. Or why is Veronica saying yes? Like, why would you make Archie seem like, yeah, you know what? He does love drinking, Dad. So, yes, he would love to have some of that rum. Why would you say that? You wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't. But, like, it's also what Hermione was saying. She wants her father's approval, even though she does. She can see the kid's gloves, the rose-colored glasses are off. Like, even though she sees that, she really wants to believe her dad's good, and she really wants to believe he can actually be a dad. The type of dad that Mr. Andrews is, even FP with all his flaws, is to Jughead. Like, I feel like she really wants to see that, and it's also clouding her judgment, and obviously her answers to things that she shouldn't be answering. Because my face, I was like, sweetie, should have been a no. Luckily, Archie didn't drink any rum when he was in his presence.
Well, we don't know that. We cut the scene away, so he's holding a glass in his hand. We have no idea.
So we just hope. We'll hope he didn't drink anything. He just listened to it, Hiram. But what I thought it was funny was Hiram was like, you will never, ever sneak into my daughter's room. That was so funny.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like it's like there's no winning when somebody gives you that ultimatum where it's like, and, you know, you will never hurt my daughter. Like, man, you know,
I'm great. 16.
Yeah. The hurt's going to be coming. And I don't know when and I don't know how, but at some point I am going to hurt your daughter. So I, you know.
Just don't have me killed like it's the mafia. I'll be okay. This is not the mafia, okay?
Yeah,
this is Riverdale.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I'm just like, I want to be like, Archie, you just told your dad you were going to be smart when you went into this. And you're playing right into his hands. Like, he wanted you to go outside of the police. You went outside the police. Go on the offensive. You decided to do a whole humiliate call out to the Black Hood. Why does that seem smart? And then why do half the guys have their shirts off in this video?
We'll get to that video in a second. That
was sexy,
ridiculous.
Though. Hey, guys.
That's bonkers.
Still.
It was bonkers.
Just saying.
So Hiram starts playing this long game with Archie, where he just, even from the beginning when he first talks to him, and they meet him for the Matchlorette, He goes, you know, come over for dinner, and I'm really excited to hear about your ideas for, you know, how you can protect Riverdale. And that just starts a ball rolling throughout this whole episode, just with a few key words in each conversation, just starts sending Archie down this path where he wants to put together a watchdog group. It's not, of course, not watchdog. He goes into his little, his little toolbox, finds his gun that he bought from Dylan, and then a bunch of Red Circle comics, which is an Archie line of superhero comics, as well as the Crusaders is in there.
Which
so really
Frank
cool.
Just loves,
I
guys.
Love that. I was like, all right, nice shout out to the Archie publication of comics past that they've done, which is really cool. But then they decide, Archie says, you know, we're going to name our little watchdog group the Red Circle. They kind of nod to the comic books. And, of course, the killer that sends a letter to Alice is names himself the Black Hood, a nod to another Red Circle comic book character who had his own series for several iterations. The Black Hood was another character. So.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was cool. I mean, although it's interesting to, you know, it's, you know, seeing him betrayed as a bad guy here. But
was a good guy?
He was a good guy, yeah. But, I mean, he punished the guilty, you know. So,
I mean, basically, that's kind of the same thing he's trying to do now. But technically, yes, drugs are bad. Sex, I guess, before marriage, if you're willing to get technical, is technically bad under the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, that does not give you a right to kill for the sake of that. In no way will that ever be right, though. And I know, like, probably as a serial killer, you don't care, because most serial killers just don't. But it makes no sense.
Well, to that person, it certainly does. They've created this elaborate reasoning in their head that this
for
worldview.
Betty, apparently.
Yeah, so.
How that works, I'm still, like, I was just saying earlier, that makes no sense to me. Okay, first of all, you shot Mr. Andrews, which is Archie's dad, which is her best friend's dad. So you can't justify doing that for me.
Well, I mean, that was just merely in the tease. We don't know full depth. So I feel we can't completely dive into motivations and speculation
I
until
want
we actually
so
see
much,
that.
Much, though.
Well, we can speculate, but we got to feel like we got to see the episode to kind of understand that. I feel like that was a little tease that we'll better understand when we see the full episode.
I'm excited. It looks lit.
All right, as you things you're excited about, let's talk about this bonkers video they do at the end of the episode.
I'm just like, half the guys' shirts are off, and first of all, it was sexy. Let's not go over that. It was kind of sexy. Dude was trying to flex his muscles. I got it, but Archie. Why you gotta be the only one without a mask on? Why you really?
Because he's not afraid. He's gonna call it out.
He is afraid. Otherwise, he wouldn't have got a gun.
Well, no, he's feeling like strength in numbers. And of course, Archie's not gonna hide behind a mask because you know what
he's
Archie Andrews. but I just want to see that conversation where he's talking to Reggie and the rest of the football team and saying, "All right, we should do this video where I'm gonna call him out. We're gonna take back our fear and start scaring him." And I want to know who brought up in that conversation, like, yeah, and we'll take off our shirts, too. We'll put on these masks and take off our shirts.
That was a lot corny and made no sense to the over. Like, in what way should this serial killer be afraid that you guys have your shirts off? In what world does that seem like it's a good idea? And in what world would that actually work as an intimidation factor? Because a gun and a body, a bullet can defeat a body real quick.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Like, yeah, well, I'll just sit around you.
And I'm just going to, you know, flex.
Yep. And there's a couple guys that decided, you know, I'm going to keep my shirt on for this. I wanted to see, were they given a hard time by the rest of the football team? Like, come on, just take your shirt off, man. We all got to be able to scare this guy. But they shoot this video.
Oh, my gosh. Billie Jean in the chat said, those are Spider-Man wannabes.
Well, the Spider-Man would wear a shirt. You know, this is ridiculous.
Okay, I'll plead the fifth on that one. And then Terrence Porter brings up a very good question, because I actually thought the same thing. Did Fred Andrews commit adultery if Hermione was separated and so was Fred?
Well, I don't know. I know Fred was separated, but I don't know if... well, Hermione was not separated.
Yeah, technically she's still married, but yeah. Fred was separated, so... But yeah, obviously, legally, yes, he's still married, so that technically does mean adultery.
Well, but he's having an affair with somebody who is married. So even though he's separated...
She's married, so that makes him an adulterer.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, sorry, Fred. Yeah, I mean, we...
Terrence, how they're going to know if the killer saw the video, if they put it on the internet, I'm pretty sure everybody would see this video.
How could you not? I mean, everybody's going to be talking about it. You know, I just... I'm just imagining this world where you're living in the world of Riverdale, and imagining like the Tosh.0s or whatever, like the ones that like grab these like viral videos and start lampooning them on their TV shows and stuff. Like, who are these guys with a bunch of red masks and no shirts on, trying to intimidate some weirdo
serial killer in a small town? Yeah, like,
what is happening?
In what world? Again, I'm saying this like legit. They'd probably be like, "In what world did you think this was gonna work, guys? Come on, fellas, you're better than this."
Ugh.
I mean, I love the fact that Ethel was back in the episode, and she actually called the number and was like, "Hey, this van, that was a pedophile van if I've ever seen one."
If it was hard not to be able to call that number, because they put posters, flyers up everywhere. If you could not call that number, then you are a fool, because that number was scattered everywhere around Riverdale.
I have to give props to the principal for this episode, because he protected Archie. Like, he didn't have to. He could have just walked on by and said, "Hey, what's up? Peace. I'm out of here." But he's like, "No, this is a school club.
Yeah.
They just want to protect the students." And I'm like, if I was a principal and that was the case, yeah, go ahead, guys. I'm all for you.
I can understand, like, their inclination, because they're the ones that did, you know, crack the mystery of who killed Jason Blossom last season. So like, yeah, we did something that the law enforcement in this town didn't do. So, you know, I can feel like they're riding a little high on confidence, given...
Yeah, but riding high on confidence can get you killed.
Absolutely. That is for sure. One other person we haven't really talked about, though, is Jughead. He's back on the south side in the high school. Something that, of course, was a big little story point in first season. And then just kind of fell on the wayside until it's really brought up, like, yep, Jughead is still having to go over to the south side to go to school. And it is a lot different over there.
Reminds me of my high school.
Oh.
Did
you have the ghoulies over there?
They weren't called the Ghoulies.
Got it.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it was I grew up in the project, so yeah, my school's good. The metal detectors, fights, get it. What I love, the fact that we met Toni Topaz, because first of all, I love Vanessa Morgan, and I love her playing this character. The pink hair, being a serpent, that's so cool. Like, just to see her in this role. And I'm excited to see, because her and Betty kind of are similar.
How soon do you think something's going to come up where she's going to, you know, whether she means to or not, going to kind of put a wedge in between Betty and Jughead?
I give her 5 episodes. And that's me being generous.
I see that.
Because I think Betty also is a little wary of Toni. In the sense, like, they did have the same thought process of bringing Jughead, you know, coffee pot. And she kind of, like, She's hot and cool. Like, come on. Like, Betty does have to... She's a girl. She has to feel in a way, like, I don't know how I should feel about this, like, this chick with my boyfriend.
But she should feel good that that Jughead does talk about her. Because when they do meet, like, oh, you weren't what I was imagining. So, Jughead has talked about her, at least.
It was everything. Yes, Winona Ryder from... I loved it.
Yeah, from Beetlejuice. Yes.
Because, like, you assume Jughead's a loner. You assume his girlfriend be somewhere in that realm.
Some kind of just, like, really kind of, like, emo kid. You know, like, all right, yeah, let's do this. But no, got Betty
Cooper.
She's
a pink world milkshake.
Yeah, until we tap into Dark Betty.
Which, can we talk about that comment, though? Because that was the best comment ever.
No, that Cheryl threw out?
Yeah, she's like, unless she turns into Dark Betty. And then he's like, and then you spoil your BDSM.
That's
I was
right.
Like, okay, first of all, that was shade, if I've ever heard it. And it was the best shade ever. It just was. Like, first of all, Dark Betty is hot. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing more of Dark Betty in this season, hopefully. Because there's something about Dark Betty. When she goes dark, like, it's awesome.
Ooh, all right. We know where Shay's allegiance is.
Shay has
there.
A girl crush on Dark Betty, yes. All right. And I'm not ashamed to admit it.
So Jughead reaches out to one of the teachers, though, to kind of reestablish the newspaper, the Black and Red.
Yeah. I was just like, y'all can come up with real names for your newspaper. You really just have to name it after colors.
That's right, man. You got the blue and gold, red and black. But we find out that he basically, just for kids getting involved with drugs, the jingle jangle and all that stuff, that and people have other interests, that the paper just kind of, he shuttered it. And now Jughead's like, you know what? I've done some writing for over in Riverdale. Let's make this happen. And so they started, but with the caveat, like, if you can write about drugs and the gangs, but if you start trafficking in either of those, you're gone. Which I feel bad for Jughead, because I feel like this paper is not going to last long.
Yeah, because, like, it's like survival. Like, which is the lesser two evils, my life or this paper? I'm gonna choose my life each time. And though I don't think he technically will join the Serpents, at least not yet, I definitely, like, sitting with them is a power move he's making to protect himself. You just got the crap beat out of you. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, it is interesting with, like, Jughead, like, how much sway his father holds. Certainly with the adults in the Serpents, totally respectful. And they just want to let you, hey, we're doing this because we want you to let your dad know we're doing this for you. I feel like the high school kids are just, like, they're not quite on that same track. Like, hey, you use us when you want, and when you don't want us, you throw us away. You can't do that.
I mean, Tony's cool about it. She's like, because I think she, in a way, somehow she gets Jughead.
Yeah, Sweet Pea's not cool about it at all.
Sweet Pea's kind of hot, though.
Oh, so that, okay, as long as he's hot, it's fine.
Well, that's not an excuse for him. I'm just saying he's hot. That's just, I also think he feels threatened by Jughead, because obviously his dad is FP, this, like, legendary serpent, and he feels threatened in the fact that either Jughead could take his place one day within the group of the South Side, being in the Serpents, or I just feel like he feels threatened by him.
I can understand that, but certainly there's very few people that you would need to feel threatened by, for less people than Jughead Jones. Like, he doesn't want to be, if you just kind of let him do his thing, he's not going to cause any waves. Well, except for the newspaper when he starts to write stories about gangs and drugs. Then he's going to start causing some waves.
I mean, I think he half already caught it. He got beat up for no reason. He ain't wrote nothing yet.
That way, it's not going to get any better. So, I mean, we'll see how long this paper lasts. I feel like it won't last very long. How long do you think he's in Southside before he comes back over to join Riverdale High?
For some reason, he's going to stick it out. Jughead isn't a quitter. So I feel like somehow he's going to somehow figure out a stick away over a stick in Southside High.
I think it all depends on when FP's released.
That also true. If FP's released, oh, he's out of there. He's going back to Riverdale High. If him and Betty are still together at that time, we'll see. Now, that is a concern for me.
But they're not going to make it?
We all know that's going to happen. They've established that. Something's going to be big enough where it breaks them apart.
Yeah, I feel like it's tough. I mean, I'm glad that they're together, but also, like, I don't know. I'll be curious to see how Riverdale handles it, because it's like, I don't want to see a bunch of, like, we're breaking up. Oh, now we're back together. Now we're breaking up. I feel like there's only so many times you can go to that well through high school with these folks before it's going to become like, ugh, great.
But I mean, that also is high school.
I guess. I never get a chance to break up with anybody. Thanks for bringing these dark memories into my life, Jack.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I'm trying to figure out Hiram's long game for this, because he's all smug that, yeah, Archie recorded this ridiculous bonkers video. Is he just trying to make Archie look like a fool so that Veronica dumps him? Like, I'm trying to figure out.
If we're thinking of long game, as much as maybe he didn't have anything to do with the whole Black Hood, for some reason, maybe he just met a serial killer and it's like kind of like unleashed that person on Riverdale, and that Fred Andrews just had to be the first victim. Because I really, what makes you, because only certain people knew about Hermione Lodge and Archie and Fred Andrews. And that list is Veronica, Archie, Jughead, and Betty. Of probably all the people who knew they were hooking up.
Did FP know?
Oh, FP did know. Okay, so FP, so five people. So if FP knew. So,
and after, yeah, some of after Moose got beat up there,
yeah,
at the construction site. So I figure, like, somebody else knows
and reported back to Hiram. I feel like Fred Andrews cannot just be, was just the first one, just because it wasn't by accident he was the first one. You could have got Miss Grundy first. Why was the need to kill her second?
Yeah, I don't know.
And why so early in the morning at Pop's?
He was driving by, saw Archie and Fred there. It's like, hey, wait a minute. I should go by and shoot somebody. You know, I guess before we wrap up, we should probably do a few predictions.
Okie dokie.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
What about Kevin stabbing Frank and Shay?
Kevin stabbing?
That question confused me.
Oh, because he does have that little flash where he imagines he gets into the Trans Am with a guy and then he gets stabbed.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay.
I thought that was nicely done. That was nicely done where it was kind of like a nice little one of those like...
what could have happened.
Yes, but I thought that was put together pretty well.
I actually agree, because I gasped. I was like, no, not Kevin, not Kevin. Like, leave Kevin alone.
Yeah.
Don't do that to my Kevin. He didn't do anything besides try to go in the woods and get some. It was not right.
That's true. But he did not get stabbed this time.
Because he has some self-preservation.
That's true. Understandable. So right at that key moment where it's like, all right, maybe I better think about the consequences of my actions. But you are all about Betty Cooper being the object of the Black Hood's desire.
Because he somehow, she got a letter like Alice did from this episode.
In code, no less.
And I'm just like, why did you send this to Betty in code? Besides the fact she might have known, so she is like, has to be someone she knows or someone like that kind of is familiar with who Betty is. Because you don't just start killing people for somebody else unless you're really obsessed. There's no need to be obsessed with the person and try to right wrongs that they think is wrong.
Yeah, I feel like
for
this,
them.
But I feel like this early in the season, it's going to be turning out to be only part of the puzzle or a potential kind of red herring. Because I feel like it's too
easy.
Yeah, it's too easy to be. Unless they plan on wrapping this up. I mean, that's only episode 4.
Yeah, we have 20.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're planning on like by episode 11 to kind of close this chapter. And then whatever kind of that leads into whatever chapter the next half of the season is going to deal with.
Okay.
Though that's the case, but still. And so your episode 4, that still even seems a little bit early, even if you're doing by like just 11 episodes.
Okay. Then my prediction is, like, the mom versus the daughters in the sense, Veronica versus Hermione, Alice versus Betty. Because they've been kind of, like, just teasing these little mother and daughter showdowns the last couple episodes. Something's gonna come to a head.
Yeah, it is so interesting now that Hiram, just even the idea that Hiram was coming back into town, at getting out of prison and coming back to rejoin them last season, right as that happened at the tail end, already started changing Hermione and Veronica's relationship, because it was a really decent relationship at the beginning of season 1. And now just Hiram just adds this toxicity to that whole kind of dynamic, that more often than not, they're butting heads when at the beginning of the show and first season, they were really there for each other.
Yeah.
So Hiram, he's no good.
Well, yeah, we all knew that.
Yeah, but...
My question would be, how much does Hermione play a role in that either, too?
Well, you know, it's... I mean, Hermione strikes the way that she can strike. So, I feel like she's... If you don't stay around Hiram for this long without knowing how the best way to kind of poke at somebody without being cut off. Because we know Hiram... Like Fred Andrews says, like, if he wants to be offended, he's going to find a way to be offended by something you've done.
Yeah.
So, and she's stuck it out this long, so she knows how to kind of tread those waters, it seems. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see who's really playing cat and mouse with each other. Is it going to be Veronica and Hermione? Is it Veronica and Hiram? Is it Hiram and Hermione? Are they all kind of...
in their own little game of mouse and cat.
Yeah. I don't know. All right. So as we get ready to wrap up the episode, do you predict anybody's going to be injured, killed by the end of next episode?
Reggie might be hurt. I just feel like he has to be. Midge, something has to happen to her. Don't know what it is, because since she escaped, I feel like we're going to see a little bit more of her. I have a feeling for that. Don't know when, don't know what episode, but she's definitely going to make a reappearance. What I predict and what I hope for is Kevin and Moose. I pitched them first season. I want some more of it this season. I want Moose to just get over it because he almost died, dude, and get with Kevin.
True. I mean, he doesn't invite her to come back and chat in this hospital room, so maybe he's having
a little baby Moose.
That's right. I loved it. Ladies and gentlemen, the time has flown by as we've broken down this episode of Riverdale. And we have reached the end of this episode. Shay, we did it.
We did it.
Look at that. I know Shay was worried that he's like, my gosh, after this episode with Frank, this is going to be terrible.
Oh, no. I love Frank. Frank is amped, guys.
I'm amped, guys. I'm amped.
It's midnight.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Riverdale After Show. But the fun doesn't stop here. It merely gets started. You can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Feel free to give it a thumbs up while you're there, too. And thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. Shay's been loving your comments and your thoughts. She's been scrolling up and down her cell phone like a mad woman there, trying to catch every idea, every comment, every thought that all you folks are having. So thanks for taking the time to join us in there. And if you want to continue the conversation with us even after the show's over, Shay, where can they find you?
Hey, guys, you can find me at Real Shay Jones on Twitter and Instagram. Nella, thank you so much for agreeing. You gasped as well. Guys, happy Halloween, even though it's next week.
Oh, that's true. But yeah, by the time we're back here on next Wednesday night, Halloween will have come and gone. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Riverdale After Show. We'll be back here next Wednesday night with, I think, a full panel to break down another episode of Riverdale right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Bye, guys. Go to sleep.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.